All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and whoever else is staying up past their bedtime, we are here. We're trying something new. We'll be trying to go out live after every single game, whether it's basketball, football, whatever, for the foreseeable future, and give everybody the opportunity to also be a part of the instant reaction or also be here live. And this will be our first one. And boy, Drew, it really comes at a great time as we get another quintessential K-State 2025 basketball performance that had a little bit of everything. It had this team, this is what we thought they might be. They might be good. And then it also had a lot of this team looks atrocious. The same problems that we talked about in game three are still happening. The same problems that we talked about in game 7, 12, whatever game you want to point out, those problems are still happening for K-State. Another problem that you can't really do much about comes when the guys in stripes really change up the way that they officiate the game in the second half, and Baylor had that stretch of possessions there where, boy, it really felt like no matter what anybody tried, they were going to be able to get to the free throw line, and obviously that really sunk K-State in this game. You wrote about an instant takeaway. Baylor only shot 2 free throws in the first half. They went to the line 23 times. In the second half, and not good at all for how they ended up playing things out. I guess it was 19 times in the second half, but there you go. 21 for the game. K-State only shoots 9 free throws. And again, some of that comes down to, as always, the style of play that these teams have, but everybody saw how Baylor got to the free throw line. It wasn't necessarily because Baylor was legally attacking the basket. They did some other things. The K-State falls 70-62 in Waco tonight. Drew, just the initial reaction to what we just witnessed down in Foster Pavilion.
Honestly, it just feels like we've watched the same movie over and over outside of the Cincinnati game against any team with a pulse. K-State plays well or doesn't in the case of the Houston game. And they play well for a little bit, and then they kind of grew the lead to a point where I thought K-State might run away with the game, to be completely honest with you. The game opens up to a 12-point game at the 16-minute mark, and I'm thinking, holy crap, like K-State really is going to do this, like we'd been talking. And then Baylor switches to a zone defense. K-State has no answer. K-State has no answer on the defensive end, where they were kind of getting a little bit of fool's gold a little bit in their favor in the first half, because there were a lot of missed layups by Baylor. There were a lot of missed threes by Baylor that came on open looks off of offensive rebounds. But, you know, you kind of felt like they were surviving it. And then just all of a sudden it was just an avalanche from Baylor. VJ Edgecombe got open a few times, knocked down threes, and then it kind of opened up from there. And then after that, it was kind of off to the races, because K-State couldn't get a stop. K-State couldn't stop fouling. Some of it was how the game was being officiated in the first 30 minutes was a lot different than the last 10. But at the same time, like, you have to be able to adjust to that. And you also have to take advantage of it on your end. Like, K-State really didn't try as hard as they did the first half to try and get to the free throw line and get into the paint. But it is pretty laughable. And somebody posted it on Twitter right before I saw it, or right before we got on here. And it is just a kind of laughable thing with how the game went, that K-State goes the first 39 minutes with 3 free throws and then ends the last minute with 6. So that's just kind of how it goes sometimes. But you got to be able to score. And scoring in the second half has been an issue all season long. And it just keeps continuing. And I don't know when it's going to get better, because the spacing is so bad on offense. The zone offense, which we hadn't seen many teams run zone against K-State, but typically K-State's been pretty good against the zone and the Jerome Tang era. there was no answers tonight for a zone. Just they are so lost on the offensive end of the court right now.
Yeah, that's to me, that's the biggest deal in all of this is it. We've all been aware of it, but tonight it was easy to see against Baylor because Baylor is a terrible defensive team. They are one of the worst in the Big 12. It's why they've become so different than what they were a couple years ago. Like they're no longer a threat to win. They're no longer a threat to win the league. And it's because the defense has gotten so bad, but K-State, you look at them tonight, they didn't really take advantage of that. I mean, early on, they didn't even look like they could get a look from three in the game. And I know that there's been a lot of Brendan Hausen discourse tonight, and his performance and play kind of highlights the issue that we're talking about here. And it's, look, Brendan Hausen, are there times where he could be better, think through things a little bit more? Absolutely. Like, there were some rush shots tonight. But I think a big reason why those rush shots are coming is because of the lack of successful positions that this offense is being put in right now. The fact that Brendan Hausen is starting basketball games and through the first, you know, to the first media timeout, isn't able to get a single shot off from three, that is a coaching failure by K-State right now. The spacing is terrible for this team, which is why when Baylor ends up going to a zone, what is the easiest way to beat a zone? Well, the number one principle would be you got to be spaced out and then obviously hit on, you know, your skip passes and all the stuff that will come with it. K-State can't even do kind of the basic stuff to set themselves up offensively right now. So I think Brendan Hausen, the up and down thoughts that a lot of people have with him, I think a lot of his issues come because of the struggles coaching. And that's where, I mean, there's still a long, long way to go in the season, but you know, everybody focused in football season once things started going south for K-State about they were calling for Connor Riley's head or other people, you know, that this guy needs to be gone. This guy needs to be gone. I think that it's been seen now over the last two seasons when you don't have two All-Americans and a really tall, crazy athletic guy like Naquan Tomlin, the staff has struggled. There might need to be some resetting of ideas on this team going into next year because the offense just continues to be a total failure. They don't look organized. They don't look like they have any type of plan. And some of this stuff, I get it's not easy, but it would seemingly be simple to recognize these problems and at least attempt to be better off for them. And I don't think that's happening right now. We're going to keep talking about this. If we're doing this after every game, we're going to say probably the same things repeatedly over and over and over again, because this team really just keeps finding different ways to do the same thing in ridiculous fashion, whether it's to just get blown out from the jump against Houston, or if it's to get yourself in a massive hole in Lawrence and then come back and be down only two possessions with 4 minutes to go, or tonight have a 12-point lead in the second half and miraculously blow it. And again, I thought the officiating down the stretch was terrible, and one of the changing calls was David Gasson getting a bogus foul on a three-point shot. But at the end of the day, we talked about this in football season as well, if it comes down to complaining about the officials, you didn't do enough yourself to win the game. Because it was a 9-point game when that foul happened on Gasson. K-State still had a little bit of a buffer there. You still could have done this thing. So I don't want the crap that I will throw at the officials to make that seem like K-State lost the game because the refs, they didn't. It didn't give them the fair shake, though, that they probably deserved in this game. Because overall, I mean, the effort I thought was there for the most part. It's just as the team and the personalities continue to provide their effort, I don't know that their coaching staff is giving them enough right now. They are not giving them the tools to succeed at this point.
Yeah, to be frank, this is just what a bad basketball team looks like. A bad basketball team finds ways to repeatedly lose and do it in the same exact way. I mean, I was for moving to the five-out offense last season because I felt like it probably fit the team better because you had somebody like Naquan Tomlin that could have done something. Then we never got to see it in action with Tomlin. then you run it back and run it this year, and you have enough shooting, I think, because all these guys could shoot at their previous stops, so they're doing something there. But you can't get open looks right now in your primary offense. And I think that my biggest beef is probably you're not running enough sets, because if your primary offense isn't working, you probably got to run a set or two to get open and get open shots. And K-State's only doing that a couple times a game now. They had a great set out of a timeout for a Hazen three that ended up not falling. But they're just lost offensively right now, and I think that that's going to continue the rest of the season, because until proven otherwise, that's just kind of who they are. So yeah, we'll see kind of where that goes. Defensively, though, is where I have a lot of problems. When two guys for Baylor combined to score 35 points on 10 shots, you're not playing good enough defense. VJ Edgecombe is a pro. Nobody on K-State is an NBA player. But you have to at least be able to defend a little bit in the second half. I mean, 20 on 5 shots for VJ Edgecombe in the second half. That is pathetic by K-State.
Yeah, he was getting anything he wanted, and that's where, you know, Ugana and Yinso, we thought maybe, will we see more of him after the KU game, because they needed him in there, because they needed that inside presence. But in this game, it was just back to not really being a threat in there. And when VJ Edgecombe comes at him, and it's still a ways out from the basket, so the only Edgecombe's not dunking on you. It wasn't like the David Gasson play, where I don't know that there's much that Gasson was going to be able to do there other than foul the guy, and there's a good chance that you foul him and he still makes the dunk. Ugo needed to provide a little bit more protection there. And if you foul him in that position, then go make him make two shots instead of just letting him go and drive on you. The defense is a problem. It was a problem on Saturday in Lawrence. Guys continue to just get way too many wide open looks from three. And I don't know if that's guys not fighting through screens hard enough or dudes just aren't in the right position. At this point, it's probably a little bit of everything, because it continues to be a problem. And I've really thought over the last 3 years, so every year of the Jerome Tang era, the three-point defense has been bad. Now, in year one, they didn't really get burnt as much on team shooting the three, but you could tell, oh, that's a good look. That's a good look. Like, they just were repeatedly there. It continued last year. This year, it's really starting to kill them. I mean, now they're giving up about 40% made threes in Big 12 play, and it's because teams just are repeatedly getting the looks that they want.
Yeah, and it is just repeated look after repeated look. And the other killer tonight, and we've touched on it, and some was a little bit of the officiating, but when K-State's a top 50 team and defensive free throw rate coming in to this game, to allow Baylor to shoot 21 free throws, that's just going to kill you when you're a team that is not a very good free throw rate team yourself. Like, that's probably one of my keys to the game, was getting to the free throw line. But to answer one of the questions in the chat that I saw, why does K-State struggle so much to get to the free throw line? Honestly, it's just seems like a stylistic thing, because K-State is very adamant at times to shoot the three, and you're just not going to get a lot of foul calls when you're shooting the three as much as K-State is. And I think that some of that, again, is just shooting threes, but I also think that they struggle to get to the free throw line because when they get in the paint, they aren't very strong in there, and it leads to a lot of misses, and then it just gets very clunky in there. So you kind of see a lot of K-State's flaws when they get in the paint. They don't really know what's going on. They throw the ball at the rim.
The other issue for this team is that when they do get the ball in the paint and somebody's going to the free throw line, Drew, do you know who leads K-State in free throw attempts this season?
Oh, it's definitely David Gasson.
It's David Gasson by 15 more than Max Jones. So Gasson's been to the line 62 times. And I don't know if that's updated to reflect tonight yet, on the ESPN stats for the season, but 62 times he's gone to the line. If it is reflecting night, Gasson, it's even more than that now, because he went back there and struggled again. That's not a good thing, and that's one of those things down the stretch that makes it really tough for K-State, because David Gasson has to be on the floor, but he is your worst free throw shooter. You cannot trust him going to the free throw line. It's unfortunate. It's a flaw in his game. It's been a flaw in about every big man's game in the history of basketball. And so for some reason, it's I don't understand it. I said earlier he needs to go to the DJ Johnson School of Muscle Memory, where DJ Johnson got to the point where he became a good free throw shooter, and I'm convinced that it wasn't because he learned how to shoot. It was because he learned, okay, if I'm shooting a free throw, this is exactly what I have to do to put it in the hole from here. So he could make a shot from the free throw line, and that little like extended block shot that he would get off occasionally, he had that. It was perfect. I want to get into a couple of the other comments from some people. And this one, I think, is particularly interesting because I've kind of hit on this some, and we can kind of tie a little bit of a bow on this topic with this question. But you see there, Coleman Hawkins had another productive night where he fills up the stat sheet in every category: 8 points, 9 boards, 7 assists. So not exactly as good as what he did in Lawrence, but still did some things. Carl says, though, Hawkins has to score more than 8 points if they want to win. I'm also surprised the zone killed their offense so much. Tang should be used to that coming from Baylor. That's a great point at the end. You would think you would have had maybe a better answer to it. And I think eventually we kind of started to see it for K-State. They got some of those looks, but it just came too late. It shell-shocked the players on the floor. But I want to hit on the Coleman Hawkins thing, because this is something that I've talked about a little bit recently. And it's that, you know, there are a lot of people out there that we've seen, I think, a lot of different guys get the, this guy's far from the biggest problem K-State has right now. And Coleman Hawkins has been probably the biggest getter of that treatment, which is totally fair. But Carl's right. Hawkins does need to score more than 8, because that's how this team was designed. Because while you look at what Coleman Hawkins is doing from an average standpoint, very similar to exactly what he's done his entire career. You're getting a little less in the points department this season. You're getting a little bit more in the rebounds department than what he did last year. And he's dishing out assists at the highest rate of his career. The problem is, though, it's the most he's turned the ball over, and the fact that he didn't take a jump in his scoring. I continue to say, when K-State brought him in, you don't bring in a guy like that and give him the money they did thinking we're going to continue to get the same production out of him. Even though that's totally fine on most teams, you are thinking you're going to give this guy an expanded role. He is going to take a jump in his production. And for whatever reason, he unfortunately hasn't. And that has been one of the things contributing to why K-State has struggled this season. So that's that. I just wanted to point that out here and answer Carl's question there.
No, you hit it right on the head. Like, K-State can't afford Hawkins to only score 8. The offense question, though, that's a stumper for me. Even like I don't know how you wouldn't at least think that that's a possibility in this game, or to be honest with you, in any game, because that seems to be what a lot of teams will do if they can't guard. And man, we'll just say, all right, let's screw it. Let's just go zone and see what happens. But you have to have a better answer. We didn't see the lob play that we saw K-State have in year one under Jerome Tang tonight. We didn't really see any sort of semblance of a zone offense. So,
you know what's funny about you talking about the like some offensive issues or whatever in inbounds and everything, plays out of timeouts. Think about year one under Jerome Tang, how like big that was and what they were able to accomplish, where it felt like if you gave them that baseline out of bounds or just any of those out of timeout plays, they were going to be successful. It feels like we've gone 2 years now where I haven't thought about the term slob, blob, or ATO with this team. And that was like a common occurrence with the team that went to the Elite Eight.
They have no adjustments to the adjustments. And not to really derail this, because you just brought this up and it really triggered something that we talked about during the game. what are you doing calling a timeout in a 2-point game? Your last timeout with 5 minutes to go. I'm sure that they could have used one of those when the game was starting to slip away with about 3 minutes left, instead of after you made a shot to make it a 2-point game with a TV timeout coming in a minute.
Yeah, that one baffled me. I don't get it, and I don't know why that's a thing that coaches have started to do, that timeout after you get a bucket, and then. It really confused me, especially when you only have one remaining. That much time left, like this team is not good enough, or has not proven to be good enough in understanding of what is asked of them to handle 5 minutes and 19 seconds in a close game by themselves. Like, you were going to need that timeout to give some direction during the waning moments of that game, maybe stop a bigger run, because when it's a 2-point game, you can survive if the other team goes down the floor and makes another basket right there. Like, you just got one. It felt like that was big. That was pretty disappointing. Again, Jerome Tang has struggled with his timeout usage, and that's been well documented over the last two seasons.
By the way, that timeout was to take Brennan Hausen out and to put CJ Jones in the game, I would imagine would be the rationale behind it. The next possession was a CJ Jones foul that immediately got Edgecombe to the free throw line, and Hausen came back in. So the timeout obviously was not effective.
Well, you know, what are you going to do? Hey, guys are trying, Drew. Guys are trying. That's all you can ask for there. I just want to point out a couple of things here. So Baylor, after struggling at the start of the second half, they finished the final 17 minutes of the game, 12 of 16 from the floor. So K-State struggled to get any stops. The other note inside of that is Baylor then went on to shoot all 19 of their free throws in the second half in that same period, where if you go and look at what took place, Baylor was 15 of 19 there. So if you combine free throws and then also the shots that Baylor took, they finished the game making 27 of their 35 shots. And because of how it works out with how they make it, I don't want to totally get this wrong, but I'm just going to kind of throw it out there and guess a little bit. I think that would end up being about 9 possessions that ended with free throws for Baylor and then the others. So Baylor essentially, on 21 of their 25 possessions from the 17-minute mark on, they ended up either making a shot or going to the free throw line. And again, that's some of that is how the game got officiated, but a lot of that comes back to the defensive problems that we've talked about as well. A couple of other notes I want to get into some of the comments as well. Mike asks, why is Moby playing over CJ? What terrible subbing. And then back to the offense that we've talked about with just, it's really tough to answer questions about the offense at this point. It's mind-bogglingly bad. But where do you see the substitution patterns? Cause Mike's not the only one to ask about what's going on here. Why are this guy playing? Why isn't this one? Moby didn't play against KU. And then all of a sudden he gets into the game in the first half against Baylor. And obviously CJ Jones's minutes have waned. What do you make of how substitutions have looked in the rotations?
The rotations have just been clunky all season. I mean, we've joked that it's kind of like lineup roulette because you don't know who's going to play when or for how long. My guess is that CJ Jones came out for Moby near the end because it's not like CJ Jones was really getting stops either on defense. So kind of felt like you needed to go with somebody else. But again, when the whole team has struggled this bad, there aren't a lot of answers to like why play this person over this person. It is genuinely a let's try this and see if that works.
Yeah, yeah. It's been like that for a while now. And this entire season, and this goes back into one of the bigger philosophical things with this season and what comes next for K-State moving forward is the fact that this team does not gel, not only stylistically with how they play, and some of that not their fault, that, again, I think that's a coaching thing. I think this coaching staff is doing a poor job of putting this team in a position to be successful on offense. But it goes more so to the mental, emotional, just having it all together and being the type of person that you kind of need to be a good teammate, to be somebody that can be functional on a college basketball team or a team of any kind. And it just goes back to what kind of players are you bringing into the program? And we've talked about it a lot. Achor not on the team after the St. John's game. Again, whether that was a mutual decision or, you know, that was K-State looking at it saying, we're better off without you being here. There's the door. See you later. You brought him in here as a guy that we thought, you look at the numbers, what he did, he was somebody that would play a significant role for you this year. We know that Doug McDaniel has obviously had his problems. George asks, as well as Ryan, where's Buddy Rich? What's going on? Why is he not playing right now? I think the easiest way to sum that up is he is not doing what he should be doing probably right now, at least in the coaching staff's eyes, in terms of on the immediate basketball floor, like a game situation. There's stuff outside of that I would imagine he's not living up to, and that's not why he's playing, because that's what happened to Doug McDaniel. And we've seen it just kind of circulate with a bunch of guys on this team this year. There have been different reasons why they are not seeing the floor. Now, CJ Jones, I don't know that he falls into that category. I think that just may be about where the path of this season is going. But again, that is the biggest issue in terms of what is plaguing this program from a big picture standpoint, is that you don't have guys that fit together, not just from their skill set, but really how they work together as a team. And then is it easy to get buy-in from guys that don't fit together as a team? It's not. So this is where my biggest emphasis this offseason, and we're probably not going to have an easy way to sum it up and decide it, is did this team get smarter from a basketball standpoint, and is this team going to be together and play like they should and live up to the expectations that most people would have of them? That's going to be the biggest thing. Like, are you getting the right type of person in? And again, we're not going to probably be able to know that because we're not the ones recruiting them. We're not the ones sitting down with them. All we can look at and see is that player X from this school that's transferring shot 37% from three last year, and he looks like a good player. So we'll see if that changes. And I think the staff is starting to realize that. But now over the last 2 years, these, I don't know that they're necessarily character concerns, but they're certainly shortcomings in the teammate department have really hurt what they could be on the basketball floor.
Yeah, I saw a couple comments, one from Mitchell and one from Kyle, about next win or how many Big 12 wins. Next win, I'm still going to say Wednesday against Oklahoma State at home. I think that that's a game that they should win. How many Big 12 wins does K-State have? I'll say that they'll beat Colorado, because I think Colorado is by far the worst team in the Big 12 this year. Could beat Oklahoma State. I still wouldn't rule out beating KU or Iowa State at home, because this team is good enough to be in lot of games.
I think every home game remaining is on the table for this team. Yeah. For what we've seen the last two games on the road, Allen Fieldhouse is the toughest place to play in the Big 12. I know Hilton would love to get that. They're very close, but it's still Allen. Obviously, even more so in that situation, because that's the game that Allen Fieldhouse wants more than any of them this year. And I think you look at everything else that comes. Like, they battled tonight on the road at Baylor. They just, again, they came up short. Baylor started making shots, and Baylor got the benefit of some bumps, some light bumps that K-State didn't throughout the course of the game. So they're close right now.
If you're in the comments still saying that you think that K-State is like the worst team in the Big 12, watch Colorado this year.
Yeah.
Just watch them. They are way worse.
Yeah, I watched all of Colorado BYU last night, and I had Colorado last in power rankings last week, because I was just like, I really can't imagine. Like, it seems like this K-State team isn't really coming together. At least I figure Colorado's probably fighting, playing hard for Tad Boyle. After watching them last night, no, they freaking suck. K-State is better than Colorado.
Cincinnati has two Big 12 wins, but they're at home against Oklahoma State, and then they beat Colorado. Like, Cincinnati's just as bad as K-State, too, which is, again, when you're in that fight for last, it doesn't really matter, but there are worse teams in the league this year than K-State. The other thing that I saw that I wanted to touch on from the comments is how does K-State come out just flop in the second half? They are struggling to adjust to adjustments that teams are making against them. Like, it really is just kind of that simple. Like, K-State wasn't ready for a zone defense from Baylor. Against KU, they weren't ready for the first 4 minutes. Because even though you hype up how the crowd is going to be, nobody really believes it, I guess, until it's happening. That's kind of the vibe that I got from a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. Here's the deal. And so I'll throw this one up here. 1-6 in our first seven kind of says a lot. Got it handed to us by Drakes, and Wichita State's of the world sure doesn't put much confidence in us versus anyone. I would agree with that. And that's why I don't like after how they played against Wichita State. Everybody knows I love to hate on Wichita State. It is my second favorite pastime behind following along with either K-State or the Kansas City Royals. But the team that is losing these games right now to Texas Tech and Kansas and Baylor is better than the one that lost to Wichita State. They are playing better basketball than that right now. The problem is that they still have such a long ways to go, and these teams are far better than Wichita State because, as I pointed out in the moment there, Wichita State, immediately after K-State, they beat Friends by less than they beat K-State by, and then Wichita State has been the doormat of the American Athletic Conference this year. Like, Wichita State is not a good basketball team. So I agree there, but with what I've seen currently – and then, again, like I've talked about, what I heard and how Coleman Hawkins handled things, how we've seen more time for David Castillo and some other players, I think they're, most of them are still working and fighting hard on this thing for K-State. I think that they want to have the payoff that will come with winning some of these games and upsetting some of these other teams and making their life miserable. Like, they want to be able to pass that on to somebody else. And I wouldn't be shocked if they're able to do it, you know, this weekend against West Virginia or, you know, when Kansas comes back and all that. It's just I'm not telling anybody to be positive and feel good about this team. But I do think that they are working and trying hard and making some strides. The problem is it's just too late, and none of it is going to be satisfying enough for this entire season. It's like you'll get that quick little boost if they're able to beat Kansas this year or Iowa State at home. But outside of that, like, it's a lost season. It's disappointing. And you got to kind of put stock in what comes next for this team. And that's the thing I want to end on here tonight, Drew. David Castillo, we just saw him play a career high in minutes at Kansas, knocked down a couple shots. He got in, made a bucket early on in the game. I thought it was encouraging to see the three fall. He only ends up playing 16 minutes tonight, 1-4 from the floor. Were you surprised that David Castillo didn't get more playing time this evening? Which, by the way, plus minus, very faulty stat and number, but he was the best plus minus on the evening with his zero, which I am kind of saying tongue in cheek, just to throw out there, because I saw that A to the J was talking about plus minus and it making him lose his mind. But yes, I would like to see a little bit more David Castillo, because that's the kind of thing that matters moving forward, is a guy that could be here that has potential, get him accustomed to it, and he's got an ability shooting the basketball that I think could have been used at times, and then plays into another comment that I saw from George about seeing Max Jones pass up some threes. Guys were passing up some looks that were there. This team has an overpassing problem, and that ties into whether it's George talking about Max Jones, people asking about Coleman Hawkins and needing to score more. Like, a lot of guys have passed up shots on this team. The only guy that doesn't pass up a shot is my man, Black Hole, Brendan Hawson. And again, there are problems there. We talked about those. I get why people would be divided on him. He's not a problem, though. I think that comes back to his coaching staff. But I think David Castillo should have played more minutes tonight. And I think if he's not playing 20 minutes a game, unless he's absolutely atrocious on the offensive end, there's no reason that he shouldn't get at least 20 minutes a night moving forward.
Yeah, I don't think that it hurts K-State any. Like, there was a point where the season wasn't totally lost yet that I could hear an argument of, like, you don't really need to play Castillo that much, but this season is so far.
The Wichita State game, he played 21 minutes, and it was brick after brick. It was like, at that point, no, this is not the time to be doing this. Once you lost to Oklahoma State, it's like, now is the time to be doing this. And we've seen, I think, some positive strides.
Yeah, I think that we've seen a lot of positive strides, and I think that he is getting better. But yeah, there's no reason for him not to be playing more. I guess the positive spin that I'll have tonight is Doug McDaniel actually looked really good for a large chunk of the game. So I guess that was encouraging. Like,
yeah,
I'm still on the fence about if he's somebody that I'd probably want to have back on this team next season, but it's nice to see him still looking engaged and really looking better, because especially for him, this is a point where, like, he could have really been checked out, but he seemed to be still really engaged.
Yeah. That is another thing that is going to play out over this next month and a half of evaluation for K-State, is they're going to have to make the determination. Has Doug McDaniel made the strides to be a player that we want to try and retain next year? Because there's obviously a lot of talent there, and we've seen the flashes at points in games. When Doug McDaniel has played some of his best basketball, K-State has been at their best this year. Again, still not a great best, but it is a best of some kind. One other personnel question from George. Do you think we are going to see by fall again this season? Do you want to elaborate, and do you think Bifall returns next year?
He might return, but I mean, they were getting their ass kicked by Houston and he still didn't get in. So I don't see him getting any
That goes back to, I question why Bifall and Moby Ikeguruke didn't redshirt this year, because those are guys that probably needed a little bit more development. And playing them, because it's not like football. You don't get to play 33% of the season and then keep your eligibility. I don't get why they've played this year. So that just goes into another one of those head-scratching coaching decisions throughout the season. But, again, it sucks because moral victories, you know, they're not my thing, Drew. but K-State, they keep scratching towards doing some things better and making you start to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I did Bosco's Boys today with Scott Wildcat, and he asked me if you think K-State plays in the NCAA tournament again under Jerome Tang. I said yes, but then he asked me if I thought it was next year, and I said no. It was, you know, it's borderline on if it happens next year, but I can see the path to this thing getting back on the rails. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take. But the lessons that are being taught to the K-State coaching staff, the staff actually has to learn from that. And we'll see if that equates to something better for game management and roster building from Jerome Tang. And again, like I mentioned earlier, what changes need to be made with the guys that are on said coaching staff, because you can't keep doing the same thing year after year, having the same problems offensively, and continue to retain the same staff since you've been here. I mean, what, the only addition K-State, or the only difference K-State's had since year one to now is Kevin Sutton left after a season. That's the only thing that's changed on this basketball team. So I guess we'll see kind of what happens. Aaron says he could have taught them the same lesson, College Football 25 and $2 million less. There are probably some boosters out there right now, Aaron, that wish you would have taught them that lesson and maybe saved him some cash for this season. But we'll end it at that, and we'll be back throughout the rest of the week with some thoughts on the Cats, and then back to do this all again on Saturday after K-State and West Virginia. From Manhattan, the Cats return home. We'll see just how many people are there to witness the Mountaineers roll into town with Darren DeVries. So for Drew Galloway, I'm Mason Vo. Thanks for watching K-State Online. Head on over to On3. Find KSO for a little bit more coverage of the Cats and Bears tonight. And then also, yes, there's football stuff over there as well. And some women's basketball content, because the K-State women, they are still winning. They get the midweek off. Big development tonight. Yep, solo first place, because TCU went on the road and lost in Stillwater to the Cowgirls. So K-State now solo first place in the Big 12. They try to keep that intact when they go to Boulder this weekend. So plenty of coverage there starting to pick up on KSO as well. We'll get out of here late night. Thanks to everybody that watched, and everybody that then is watching on delay tomorrow as well.